Hi, this is Roger Marsh with a special offer for you from Family Talk. During the month of April, we're giving you the opportunity to get a copy of a resource that's one of Dr. Dobson's best-selling books. It's called When God Doesn't Make Sense. Now, this is a resource that will help you hold on to your faith during difficult times, especially when it doesn't seem like God's even hearing your prayer. We'll be happy to send you a copy of Dr. Dobson's book, When God Doesn't Make Sense, as our way of thanking you for your gift of $20 or more to Family Talk right now. Go to drjamesdobson.org to learn more. That's drjamesdobson.org.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Tim Clinton for Family Talk. Where do you go to receive support and advice for your family? You know, we interact with thousands of people every day through our Facebook page. There you're going to find inspiring advice on what matters most to you, whether it's marriage or parenting. You can be sure our profile will keep you updated with how your family can succeed. Visit us at facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Each day, you're going to find our latest broadcast, helpful resources, inspirational pictures and quotes. Nowhere else are you going to be able to start your day with a thought from Dr. Dobson, as well as a special message before you go to sleep. Remember, you can be sure that every post on our page is created with you and your family in mind. Take time to visit us and become a part of our online community on Facebook, will you? Simply go to facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Today on Family Talk.
Many grown men today struggle with their identity and purpose for life. The reason being, culture has completely emasculated and demeaned the idea of manhood. Fathers and husbands, in turn, relinquish their leadership roles in their families. And when men abandon this responsibility, it creates a cycle of bewildered boys that could last for generations. Today's edition of Family Talk will deal directly with this growing problem. I'm Roger Marsh, along with your host, child psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. Today we are dusting off a well-liked and appreciated classic conversation featuring Dr. Dobson and author John Eldridge. John is a prolific writer and founder of Ransomed Heart Ministries, located in Colorado Springs. John also worked for 10 years alongside Dr. Dobson during his tenure at Focus on the Family. John Eldridge has authored numerous books, including Captivating, Outlaw, and Wild at Heart, which will be the focus of today's program. In just a moment, you'll hear their conversation, which explored the damaged soul of men. John talked about the meaning of manhood and shared how he was rejected by his distant father. Here now is Discovering the Abundant Life, here on Family Talk, a production of the James Dobson Family Institute.
Isaiah, in chapter 61, Jesus says, "I've come to heal the brokenhearted and set the captive free." And it's actually that passage that he quotes when he announces his ministry, you know, after the trial in the wilderness, and he comes into that first moment in the synagogue, and all eyes are on him, and they give him the scroll of Isaiah, and he goes down to what we would call chapter 61, and he says, "Here's why I've come. I really want to heal you, and I want to set you genuinely free, to be my own again." So that's what we do, primarily for men. It all started with men. Giving men back their masculinity, restoring them as men, or being used by God to restore them.
What takes place? How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, we take men into the deep places of the image of God in them, right? When God created man in his image, he did it male and female, you see. So they have a masculine heart or a masculine soul, right? And that soul has been wounded. And they don't know who they are as men. They are lost, many
of
them.
You can say that as a generalization. Most of the men who come do not know what it means to be a man.
No, they don't. They don't, Jim. And your ministry has been built around trying to salvage what has happened because of that, either in the home or in the community.
That's right.
Right? It has been the loss of men. I mean, we have a lot of men walking around, but not real men. You know, where are they? They are lost and they are wounded. And in some ways, what we've discovered is all a man needs is permission. Permission to admit his real desires as a man, what he really wants as a man, you know, that battle to fight, right? And venture and all of that. And permission to admit his wound, which primarily probably came through his dad. who did not tell him, you are a man. You
know? And your assumption is that almost every man is wounded one way or another.
I've never met one who isn't, ever. Anywhere we run into men, I've never met one who isn't. Because, I mean, we live a long way from Eden. You know, this isn't a world that we were designed to grow up in. And little boys, they don't hear from their dads what they need to hear when they're growing up. That's the best case scenario. What actually happens is all kinds of things are said and done to them that wound them deeply as boys, and they never become men. David in the psalm says, be merciful to me, O Lord. Deal well with me out of your love, for my heart is wounded within me. Now, he was a man's man. I mean, come on, yeah. Right? Goliath, you know, the Philistines, all those stories, right? Yeah. He was a warrior and a king and a great man in many ways. And yet he knew the reality of a wound in the soul. And he begged God to come and heal him. And then that's what Jesus announces that he came to do. You see, it's not just, I want to shape up your behavior, right? Uh-huh. You know, but the Pharisees were great at getting the act together on the outside. But God says, I want to change you from the inside out, make you a new creation, restore you as my man.
You know, you and I wrote books at the same time, not talking to each other, and yet there's great communality between the two of them. My book, Bringing Up Boys, deals with the fact that boys don't know what it means to be a boy, and they certainly don't know what it means to be a man. And there's great confusion about their masculinity, and that's a major portion of the book. You really kind of picked that theme up, and you did it independently at the adult level, and say men don't know what it means to be a man either because of what they experienced when they were boys.
Bingo. Exactly. That our culture no longer knows how to initiate boys to men, right? I mean, there's a lot of boys around. You know, we have no shortage of boys, but we don't know how to take them through that process of making them men, and so that they know down in their hearts they have what it takes. They can stand up, right, for what's right. They can come through, right? We don't know how to do that. And so somewhere between boyhood and manhood, something gets lost.
You know, I have read about some more primitive cultures, if you want to use that phrase, in Africa and other places where a boy turns 12 or 13, and then he is sent out alone into the surrounding countryside to spend the night out there and to fight mythical lions, maybe real lions. And when he comes back, he is transformed. He is a man from that time on. He fights in the wars. He acts and behaves like a man. He puts away childish things. We don't have such an initiation here. And if a person goes through high school and college and maybe even beyond, he is not even emancipated from his own parents. They may be still paying the bills for him. And there is no point at which he can say, I'm a man, and this is what it means to be a man.
Yeah. Yeah. Jim, the Maasai tribe, for example, in Africa says you cannot court a woman until you have killed a lion. As a young man. Right. Now, that means with a primitive weapon, a spear or a club. In other words, you have to know who you are first as a man before you can go to a woman. And most of these guys just take their questions and their confusion to the woman, right?
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, they wind up in our counseling offices. Mm-hmm. You know?
You mentioned a minute or two ago that the masculine nature has been denied them, has been robbed. You also said that this wound that occurs frequently comes from the relationship with the father. What is it that fathers do, and what is it that the culture does to emasculate men?
Yeah. Let's start with the grounding. Genesis 1, okay? And God created them in his image, male and female, he created them. I mean, that's just so important for us to put out there, because when God gives the most important gift to mankind, his own image, he does it at the level of gender. It is either as a man or as a woman that we bear the image of God. And so when you start messing with gender, you're messing with the deepest thing about a person, when a culture is confused about gender, you have a culture in its final stages mm-hmm. because they're confused about the most essential things. So look at little boys. What do they want? You know, you give a boy a bike, for example. Is it enough that he learns to ride it? See, he wants adventure. He wants danger. He wants a life of battle, you know, and risk and all of that that we see wrapped up in boys, right? They play soldier and cowboy and policeman and all of that. You see that in the heart of a boy. And you don't have to make them want this. You have to let them be who they are.
And what you're saying is the culture and sometimes their mothers, sometimes their fathers don't allow them to be wild at heart.
No, isn't it true? I mean, Mom, bless her heart, she's the incarnation of mercy, okay? I mean, boys learn and little girls learn tenderness, mercy, unconditional love from Mom, okay? But Mom's got to let go, and she has to let those boys go with Dad. You see, into the masculine world. They've got to go with Dad to play basketball, to go hunting, to enter into that sort of initiation process with Dad. And here's why. Because every little boy has one question. And just one. This is so simple. Every little boy is asking, do I have what it takes? That whole thing of look, no hands, right? Yeah, or can I jump off the dock into the lake, right? Or can I, you know, make the team? Any of those things, it's always the same question. Do I have what it takes? And he looks to Dad to answer it. Daddy, am I a real man? Do I have what it takes? And the power of the Father to either bless or cripple is just astounding. The rest of that boy's life will be shaped by how his dad answered or did not answer that question.
How is the question often answered?
In passive fathers with silence. You see, that was my story. My dad was a good man. And we had some early years together that were just precious to me. He taught me to fish, you know, and we'd spend a lot of time out there in a boat catching nothing, you see. But it was the time with my dad. And that it was his delight in me, that he wanted to be with me, you know, and then showing me how to do it, right? And then he became an alcoholic. And he just went silent. Now, he was not a violent man. He wasn't a mean drunk. He was just gone. And so some men just hear silence, like me. And they have an unanswered question, you see. And they typically become the driven men. Right. They overcompensate. They become the hyperachievers or even the town bullies. You know, they try and prove that they're something. You know, they're the guys with the giant tires on their trucks, you know, and they never take them off road. And you wonder, what is that for? You see, he wants to look like the man, but he doubts very much he is. And then you have the violent fathers. OK. And their stories, those men know what their wound are. You see that. Young man was in my office not too long ago, and 12, 13 years old, his parents were having an argument, and he stepped in to defend Mom. Now, you see, that's what a man is for, okay? That's what he's meant to do. Rise up, defend, protect. He stepped in between his mom and his dad, and his dad looked at him, and he said, "You mama's boy." Now, he's 28 years old, and he's in my office, and he says, "That's what I am. I'm a mama's boy." He cannot marry a woman, though he very much wants to, finds himself addicted to pornography, on and on the stories go, right? Because of that violent wound, that blow, that rejection, that name that he was given, you are not a man and never will be.
Oh, John, there's so much there. You are saying that this is almost the entire culture.
Oh, yes.
That everybody has been there. Men especially have been there.
Oh, yes.
By their inability to find that masculine place.
Look at all the issues that you so deeply care about. Divorce and the breakdown of the family. Okay. Fatherless children. pornography, abortion, any of the major social issues, you take any of them and they will find their root in the inability of men to be men, to play the man, to come through, because they've got that question in their soul and that question's never had an answer, or it's had a devastating answer.
Do you think schools are emasculating boys?
They're made for a whole different kind of world, a world that you were describing of initiation and sort of a welcoming in, saying, you know what, that aggressive nature, that's a good thing. Now, not to hit your neighbor, but to defend, to protect, you know, those firemen that went up the stairs.
Now, we admire them. They're heroes.
Aren't they? Where did they get that? That courage, you see, that's deep in the masculine soul, and the schools, in large part, take it away from boys.
That's what you were saying in your book, Wild at Heart. This is one of the most popular books, I guess, of the last 2 or 3 years, Discovering the Secret of a Man's Soul. You're really authenticating masculinity. You're saying it's all right to be a little bit crazy, to be a hunter and a fisherman or a bungee jumper. Not everybody, however, has to do those things.
Right. My boys love to play chess, but they don't like to get beat. Mm. You see, even there, you know, in an intellectual game, a man still wants to win, right? He wants a battle to fight. Now, it doesn't have to be a literal battle. Some men are made to go to war, to protect their country and to protect freedom. But other men fight other battles. He might be a doctor, right? And his calling may be to fight for the health of people, you see, to battle disease or injury or harm. You know, he might be a counselor, and his job is to battle the breakdown of a marriage or the loss of a child, you see. But a man needs a battle to fight. It is in his soul. Exodus 15:3, the Lord is a warrior. The Lord is his name. You see, we're made in his image. So whether it's hockey, you know, and I'm not a hockey player. I weigh 135 pounds. I never did college football. I don't have trophies of game animals on my walls, you know, but I want a battle to fight. And I know that I'm made in the image of that warrior God. Something happened for my son Blaine this weekend. And it wasn't a successful hunt. It was 4.5 days in the woods with Dad, keeping up with me over some pretty rough terrain, laughing together, you know, having some meals together, being invited into a masculine world. And he was lit up. And when he came home, he just told story after story to Mom and his brothers. It was a passage. It was part of that initiation where a young boy is brought into the company of men, and he is affirmed, and he is validated as a young man. And the other men that were in our company there would say things like, "Wow, Blaine, you were really something out there today."
One of my books was called Straight Talk to Men and Their Wives, mostly Straight Talk to Men. Was written, first edition of it, in 1980. It's still out there, and if you get a copy today, you will read there that I said the happiest days of my life were the days that I spent hunting with my dad. And again, it didn't matter if we got anything. It was the two of us out there. I was invited into a grown-up masculine world, and I absolutely loved it. And there were things that took place between my dad and me, the way he related to me there, that didn't happen anyplace else.
Yes.
And I still look back on those times as just being absolutely precious.
See, a man needs to know he's powerful. He needs to know that. He needs to know he's got what it takes when the going gets tough. And you'll watch little boys test that through their whole youth and up into their adolescence, and that whole thing with, you know, adolescent boys and fast cars and, you know, the shoot 'em up movies and that kind of thing. You look at that, that is not psychological disturbance brought on by violent television. They are looking for their masculinity. They're looking to know they're powerful.
It has to be controlled, though, doesn't it? It has to be within certain limits.
Shaped by the father.
Exactly.
What we're trying to describe is the question boys are asking. Daddy, do I have it? Do I have what it takes? And the role of the father to answer that question for his son, not just once, but 1,000 times over his youth. And if all you'll do now is just look for it when he's playing in the yard, when he's building a model airplane, the question will come up. I can't do this. I don't have what it takes. And it's the father's role to step in and say, son, you do. You do. In fact, this is absolutely amazing. Right before Jesus starts his official ministry, okay? He's obviously been in the carpenter shop for years, but he's now going public, okay? And it's those last 3 years. He is baptized by John in the Jordan. He comes up out of the water, and what happens?
Well, the dove descends and said, this is my beloved son in whom I'm well pleased. And then he is led into the wilderness.
You see, if the father speaks and he validates him, right? I mean, he basically says, Jesus, you are the apple of my eye. You have what it takes. Now, this is amazing. If Jesus needed to hear that, the Son of God needed those words from his father before he launched into his greatest test of his life, how much more do we need to hear those as men?
And those events were back-to-back in his life.
Weren't they?
The high point of his life, undoubtedly, was hearing those words from God.
Absolutely.
This is my beloved son. And straightway, he was led into the low point of his life.
And look where the devil attacks him. If you are the Son of God, if you are, 3 times he comes at him, attacking him at his identity. You see, he tries to go after the very blessing that the Father just bestowed.
It's really good to have you back, and thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for the insights that you're sharing with regard to masculinity. It's really been interesting to me to read what you've had to say in Wild at Heart, because it is the extension again of what I was writing about in Bringing Up Boys and what happens when those needs are not met properly at that point. And they don't go away. They're still there at 30, 40, 50 years of age, aren't they?
And the good news is, Jim, is that those questions can be answered. The story is not over. A man doesn't have to live there. He can find from God what he didn't have from his father.
Okay, John, thank you for being with us.
Great to be here.
Powerful insights on this edition of Family Talk into the problem of fatherlessness and the lack of godly men in the home. You've been listening to a classic conversation featuring Dr. James Dobson and author John Eldridge. Learn more about John's many best-selling books and his ministry, Ransomed Heart, on today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org. Also, I urge you to share your thoughts with us about today's program. You can call our listener feedback line at 877-732-6825 and select option 3. Once you connect with us, you'll have up to 2 minutes to leave your comments, so please be concise. Also, feel free to suggest a guest for our broadcast team to consider for an upcoming interview. Again, the number for our listener feedback line is 877-732-6825 and then select option 3. We do look forward to hearing from you. As we close, thanks so much for your faithful support of the ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. Your financial assistance allows us to continue to fight for families all over the world. You can visit drjamesdobson.org for more information on how you can partner with us. That's drjamesdobson.org. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'm Roger Marsh. Thanks for listening.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. Before we go, I'd like to remind you that Family Talk is a listener-supported program. If you've enjoyed this broadcast, we'd appreciate your helping to keep us on the air. As you know, we talk about everything from religious liberty to the sanctity of human life and raising boys and girls, among others. These are the passions of our hearts, and I hope they are for you, too. Thank you so much for listening and for being part of this ministry. For more information, go to drjamesdobson.org.
If self-esteem is something we value for our sons and daughters, maybe it would be helpful to assist them in achieving it.
Dr. James Dobson, for Family Talk.
It seems like every teenager has to come along today and bump his head on the same old rock, experiencing those terrible feelings of inferiority and inadequacy. To help kids minimize that experience, I've found it beneficial to talk to them about confidence long before adolescence has arrived. For example, when a young child meets another boy or girl who's too shy to speak or even look at him, you might say afterwards, "Did you notice that Johnny didn't look at anyone when he spoke? Why do you suppose he seemed so embarrassed when he was talking to us? Do you think he doesn't have much confidence in himself?" As the elementary years unfold, you can talk openly about feelings of low self-worth and how they translate into action. For example, when someone misbehaves in school, you might ask your child about it. "Did you notice how silly David acted in class this morning? He was trying hard to make everyone pay attention to him, wasn't he? Do you have any idea why he needs to be noticed every minute of the day? Maybe it's because David doesn't like himself very much." When we train our children in this way to see others in a truer light, while preserving their own dignity and sense of worth, we're laying a foundation for their own self-confidence during the inevitable storms of adolescence.
Hear more at drjamesdobson.org.